Hi everyone, this is Michael Jura with Learn Remote Viewing, and we have one of our most popular speakers on the phone with us today, Gerald O'Donnell. So here's what happened. Gerald has been with us for about a year. This is the fourth or fifth interview we've been doing on the phone with him, and he constantly gets several thousand people on the line listening to him. He is so popular that, get this, a few hours ago, actually, 3 days ago, we put up a blog post on our blog asking people to submit questions for this teleseminar/interview. And we were not expecting to get as many questions as we did. I checked this morning and we had 508 questions submitted. Now this is about five times the normal amount of questions we get for teleseminars, and it just goes to show how popular a speaker Gerald is and how excited people are about listening to him answer these questions. So here's what happened. Gerald and I spent this entire morning combing through the questions, try to identify trends, questions that came up repeatedly, questions that we thought would be of incredible interest to the audience. And we went through 508 questions and narrowed it down to some 20 hot topics. And that's what Gerald's going to be talking about. So if you're interested in Unity Point or remote viewing or the power of the mind to bend and shape reality, this is going to be a call that is going to open up so many new ideas and pieces of knowledge to you. Gerald, how are you today?
I'm okay, Michael. I'm doing great. How are you?
Wonderful. And so it's been a while since we last spoke, Gerald. It's been almost 3 or 4 months. Anything exciting that you've been up to?
Yes, I've been traveling a bit, and I've been teaching a couple of my students. We've been doing sessions and doing some spiritual work together.
Awesome. Well, Let's dive straight in, because we only have about we have about an hour, and we're going to go straight in. And so this is the first question, Gerald, that you picked, and I know you picked the question because you have some interesting points to share in it. So this question comes from Skurdy. I don't know what country Skurdy is from, but this is what Skurdy said. Can remote viewing and remote influencing be used to influence the past? In other words, can we go back in time to find turning points of our past and influence these?
Okay, that's a very interesting question. Let me tell you why. According to the latest research in quantum physics, you can change by the way you perceive reality at this moment. You're actually changing in the past. It's called the delayed choice experiment. This was done by a professor called John Wheeler, who was working with Einstein at Princeton University and then at the University of Texas at Austin, in the Department of Theoretical Physics. And it's a very famous thought experiment, which has now been done in a laboratory 1 year before this gentleman passed away, which I think was 2008. So the experiment was in 2007. And it was done by a team of French theoretical physicists. One is Alain Aspect, who is very known in the quantum field, and it's another one called Bouchard. And they proved in actuality that you can, by the way you would look at it, you study a certain experiment, you are in actuality, you are changing the causality. If you want, you're doing a retro causal change to the present event. So in other words, you can activate a different reality in your present by changing the past, or vice versa. You can by doing something in the present, you might find yourself having changed something in the past. Now you're going to ask me, this sounds very interesting at the level of the micro level of physics, but how do we achieve anything like that at our own human level? And this is something that I'm about to cover in the future, and it's also a part of our course in the Diamond Body CD, where you are taught to create a higher vibratory body, and in that vibratory body you can put memories, which would be the equivalent of what psychology right now calls the false memory syndrome, but there is no real false memory syndrome. You can put memories that are positive regarding your past that will then change your present accordingly, because they will become you and condition you to a better reality in this moment and in the future moments. And that's already explained in our course, and I'm going to explain it further in the next couple of weeks.
That's wonderful stuff, Gerald.
So the answer is yes. You can remote influence the past. Interesting enough, most people will be surprised and they're going to ask me, how is that possible? Well, you don't necessarily remember your past every day in the same way. That might be shocking to you. And it's the role of the creator or the smaller creators sometimes to alter the past to fit the reality that they want us to achieve or experience. And we're not aware of the shift because it's only a memory. As a matter of fact, if I were to ask you what you did yesterday, you are sure that you experienced it, but there is no way for you to prove to me, literally to prove to me, that whatever you think you experienced yesterday was really experienced. If you understand that all of creation is a dream.
I can understand you from a philosophical point of view. That is extremely profound. It's so deep, though. I know it can be hard for most people to embrace this into their understanding. But then again, that's why we love talking to you. So
yeah.
Let's go on to this question. It's by Sir Rise, and this was the second question you picked, Gerald. And the question is this. Does the term unity point refer to the innermost point within the one mind, or the reality of spirit being within the wholeness of mind consciousness?
It's both.
Okay. Well, we had a lot of questions on unity point. Yes, please go ahead and explain that.
Let me explain to you. When you take our remote viewing, I always talk about the center of energy, and a lot of people ask me, where I feel my center of energy is in my heart, and some people say it's in my stomach area, and other people tell me it's in their head. In reality, it is not in your biology. It's your center of being. It's within your consciousness. What I'm trying to have people do is concentrate on that unity point that everyone, every creature has, because by the mere definition that it is a unity point, it unites you with everything else, up to the level of the one, because that point is the one. You follow me? Otherwise, it wouldn't be called the one.
Right.
So we all carry within ourselves a spark, which you could call the unity point within ourselves. Now, there is a unity point within the earth. Inside the earth, there is also a spark, bigger one, that carries a unity point that then connects the earth to a more global format of creation, where there are many creations, there are many Earths, of course, you know, different universes, and it connects them to the other universes. And then within a whole grouping of universes, there is a unity point for that. You follow?
Uh-huh.
And then all those universes, of course, have a unity point where the one dwells, and the one really encompasses all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you have to go, you in order to connect to the one, you have to go through your unity point first, then you connect to the unity point of the earth, then you use the bypass of nature, which is higher, to connect to the unity point of nature, and through that, you then go to the unity point of the one. That's why we always say, you go into Delta, and that's a remote influencing course, you go into Delta, you will experience the unity point at some point or another, and you will use Delta as a gateway. You know, the format of Delta is a triangle, it's a door. That's why it's called Delta, it's a door. And you use that doorway in order to be able then to connect to the one and to the energy of the one. You attract attention. You attract the attention of the higher dimensional beings, which are really you, but in a higher format, and they start paying attention to you, and then things happen.
So can this unity point, now you mentioned Delta, but I know there are other programs out there that talk about alpha or theta. Can you go on to explain, can this occur at the theta level or the alpha level, which are also levels of meditation, but nowhere near as deep as Delta, or does one have to go to Delta to experience this?
Originally, look, everybody goes into Delta. When people ask me, do I have to go into Delta? And I tell them, my friend, you're sleeping about half of your life away, and you are going to be in Delta anyway. But the question is, what do you do when you're in Delta? Usually you're passive. Your mind is totally passive and basically shut down when you're in Delta, short of a certain small amount of time when you do REM sleeps and you have dreams. So it's not being in Delta or being in Theta that's important. It's what you do while you're there. We can do things at Alpha. That is not a unity point, but that's a portal for information and creation on a certain level. Theta is an interface between Delta and awakeness. You're just right at the interface. And then you can connect to the information that originates already from Delta. When you are in Delta, then you can look for, if you want, and ask for that unity point and use the vibrational level of that point. You follow?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So this next question comes from Sam, and you rated this as an excellent question. And Sam said, Gerald, if I'm actually the one currently experiencing different physical realities, is there a purpose behind this? I'd like to know, why is there a need to experience lower vibrational manifestations when the higher state is obviously freer and much more powerful?
Okay. There are many reasons for that. There are reasons that have to do with us, the way we are right here, and there are reasons that have to do with the way the godliness is projecting into this creation, into all of us. But let's start with the reasons that have to do with us.
Okay.
We are all operating in the different systems of operations and the different vibration, and especially different awarenesses. When you get to a higher vibratory level of thought and a higher awareness, your thoughts automatically become more creative.
Mm-hmm.
You create your reality in a faster way, in a more powerful way, and in a more immediate way. So that in order for you to be allowed to create as such, you need to show that you have within you a very well-developed heart. I'm talking about the heart now, not the mind. Meaning that you care very much about others, and that you want to share with others, and that you want to operate in a very, very harmonious type of operation. Because if you're not ready for this, and you're gifted the ability to manifest powerfully, there is the risk, and this has been happening on occasions before, of misuse of that power, and then it can cause havoc. So therefore, this is a place. Also, that this matrix, even though it's a low vibratory matrix, it has its purpose. It's a matrix where you are being tested through many events, where the matrix will show you that good things happen to you if you're egoistic. Good things happen to you if you close your heart and so on and so forth, or exploit each other. When in reality, the purpose of this is to see who are the ones who will find within themselves on their own the ability to think otherwise and start to rebel against the system, stating this is not the way we should operate, meaning that they have a natural conscience that they have developed. Even though they were born in the matrix, they've developed a natural conscience, a level of higher conscience, where they don't have to be told through religious precept what to do or not to do, because they already have it within themselves. These individuals can then be allowed to enter a higher level matrix. You follow me?
Yes.
It's like a distillation process. It's a process that allows for filtering of higher beings. Now, what I also want to say is that at this timing now, we are in a totally different process of ascension. In the old ascension process, you would have either one individual or a group of individuals that would attempt to ascend. And they would sometimes ascend successfully so. But that was an individual. It was always gifted to individuals. There was an individual attempt. But in this creation right now, because of the state of this creation, because of the amount of people that we have in this creation, at least perceptually, because of the condition, which is pretty pitiful, of this creation right now, there has to be a global ascension process engaged. Because if it is not engaged globally, this creation will just not be able to be vibrated anymore in the mind of the one, and it will just disappear. Mm-hmm. Not by our own decision, but by the decision of the one. Just to avoid more suffering, because it's a very painful creation to start with. So what I'm saying is that right now, this is a very serious undertaking, and there is a lot of concentration coming in from many, many levels of creators and the gigantic creator, meaning the one watching this, intervening most of the time secretly, but intervening here, so that at least we keep the balance here, and we at least get an understanding of what this is all about. Now, who is going to engage in this and who will not, that's always a personal choice.
Okay, and this leads to a question by Pat. And the question is, well, who assigned us this experience? What is the eventual goal or value of having it? Who ultimately benefits from us living in this reality, and how? And out, she goes on to ask, I feel we are the innocents and have been placed here for a specific purpose. What is the point of it all, and who placed us here?
Well, it's kind of obvious. The one placed us here because we are parts of himself that were on purpose decided to fall down here to such a low level of hum vibration and a high level of separation in order to learn basically the pain that separation causes within the one. Experience it in the flesh and in the soul and in the mind, to be scarred by it, so that when we then go back to the one, because we are just only parts of the one who has been experiencing either remotely or directly some of the parts here, will have a very strong awareness of how painful separation is and how detrimental it is to his own being, and then will learn from it, as we are all going to be him anyway at that point, him or her, because there is no gender at all. You follow?
Yes.
So it's a very necessary process. It's basically the one separating himself in the illusion of being many. You know, you understand? It's mm-hmm. like separating himself in many, many facets, characters, playing roles, and starting to forget because they're so remote from his vibration that they are him, so they think that they're just themselves, and then being put into situation where they need to survive, and then they are put into difficult competitive environments where they very often are misled or hurt each other. Mm-hmm. And that's it's a painful condition, but it's a way of avoiding a repetition of this type of creation forever almost. So we know how far we can go in separation. And this is, I think, as far as we can get.
Right, and I've heard you mention this before in one of in our two interviews back. You talked about how we constantly go through waves of contraction and expansion, and right now we've expanded as a society, as the human race. We've expanded and been separated from
right.
each other as far as we could possibly get, and now we're right. moving into a state of contraction.
Right. It's not only this society; it's the whole godliness, the whole one, has expanded. If you want. From his core awareness of himself, where the mm-hmm. light is so strong, and you cannot not know that you are him, because you're bathing in the awareness, to a level which is where that perception is almost nil. It's not there unless you look for it diligently, and then you seek through meditation or other means to feel even for a while that connection. That's what I mean. That expansion has gone as far as it can, but we're still him. If you were to imagine the one as being a human body, okay, which is somehow not a wrong metaphysical representation, because it has metaphysical meanings, we would be his toes.
I see.
The bottom of his feet.
We would be the toes. I like
that. That's where we would be, yes. But he needs his toes, because if he loses his toes, he can't walk creation. That's how important we are.
I see. So with that, let's go on to this next question by Lynette, which actually, you picked this question. It's interesting because it has a bit of a religious basis. But before we get there, for those of you who are listening in, you can find out more about the programs that Gerald teaches and learn more, get a much richer, detailed knowledge of Gerald's philosophy, and find out why he's so popular with with everyone listening in, just scroll down on the page you're at right now where you're playing this audio, just scroll down, find out more or learn more. All right, so let's go on to this question. Now, this came from Lynette, and she submitted this question in one day, 22 hours ago. Gerald, can you tell me what is meant in the Bible when it says, let's create man in our image? Who is the us and who is the our? Is God really a plural entity?
The word in the old Bible is called Elohim. It's been mistranslated as the Lord. It is a plural entity that is one, meaning it's many that still form one. They're parts. Mm-hmm. It's a plural format of El, of the one, when he has many parts within himself. High vibratory parts that operate right within himself, within the awareness of being but only parts of the one. That's called the godliness. It's the most powerful level of the one. And that part calls itself us in plural. And as a matter of fact, if you read the Quran, you're going to realize that very often God calls himself we, you know, because that's the same notion. But it's still one. You follow? It's like a
yes,
myself uh-huh. or me. My foot, my feet are me. My hands and my fingers are me, but they're just parts of me. And they have a task. Everyone has a special task.
I see. Wow. I mean, that's something completely new to me, and I bet to a lot of people listening in. The idea of Elohim and the idea of God as a collection of entities. It almost reminds me of the work of Esther Hicks, where she channels the entity Abraham, and he too refers to himself in the plural.
Right.
So,
because most higher entities have parts within themselves too.
Mm-hmm.
See, Abraham really, he means the father of many in Hebrew. So he has many in him that he connects to, and therefore he is one and he's many too. All of creation is like this. And I can go on for hours even explaining how in our creation we are one and many at the same time.
Well, actually, let's go there, because this is an interesting topic. You said in our creation we are one and many at the same time. Tell us more.
Right. Well, you know, even at the level of the operations of this creation, for instance, if you take the Earth, what we call the Earth, some people call the Matrix. If you take the Earth has children which are born in the Earth, the children of the Earth. The Earth has a core, which is a core connected to a higher level, creational level. And that core is one, and then projects out onto all the individuals that walk, the Earth. So it's one and it's many. Within the way this organizes itself within the memory banks of the Earth, there are ways by which higher souls of beings experience a certain line of descendancy. In other words, a father will experience a son and daughter. We'll discuss it another time how it operates.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still one and many. When a person passes on, they go back to a point when they will experience their children in a certain way. So they still and they're connected. They connect not only connected. They merge at that point with the ancestry.
I see.
And that's how the Earth or Adam, if you want, learns. And there is a difference between the male side and the female side, but I won't explain that tonight.
Okay.
We'll leave this for another time.
Well, then, let's go into this discussion. So this was a constant theme in all the questions we got. And it relates to what exactly is the Matrix. So here are a couple of questions we got. Wendy asks, who's in charge controls the Matrix? Are we, as a collective, the same energy referred to as God? Cody asks, are the Matrix and the spirit world one and the same thing? And Steve asked, now this is a slightly weirder question, in regards to the Matrix, is it a phenomenon that evolved as human as the human race evolved over hundreds of thousands of years, or was there some sort of intervention, extraterrestrial or otherwise, that programmed the matrix for human enslavement? So okay. Three different questions, all about the matrix, all comparing it to different things.
Yes. Can you repeat the second part, because I didn't hear you. Sure. The second one.
Oops. The second one was, so the first one was by Wendy. Is the matrix same as God? The second one was, is the matrix and the spirit world the same thing? And the third one was, is the matrix something that we evolved, that we created as we evolved from monkeys to humans? Or was it something that was created for us through some intervention, extraterrestrial or God?
I understand. Okay, I will start with an exclusion. Men never evolved from monkeys. Okay, that's totally ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying this on a religious basis. I'm just saying this, it has nothing to do with it. Monkeys are monkeys, or humans are humans. And the reason for it is because the higher self of a monkey has nothing to do with the higher self of man. So man, the first higher self of man was unmanifest, and called Adam. It was an extremely high being. Mm-hmm. And it went down until it lost its nakedness, so to speak, and got a cover of skin, which means it got a biology. So the moment the man was put into a biology, we got a biology made up for us by the Elohim, and we started operating on lower levels. So that whole theory trying to put everything into linear time and linear causality is ridiculous. Everything was created at once. But now to go back to the first question, is the matrix and God thing? No, the matrix is a creation of God. It's a creation of thought. It's a system. It's an operational system that needs to be energized. And that the energy that the matrix needs to have is the energy of spirit. Spirit is like electricity. If you plug spirit into any thought computer, if you want, because the matrix is really a thought computer, that thought computer becomes alive and operates. And if you have, it's like us. If we don't have we have a computer and we unplug it, then the whole screen goes down and there's nothing going on there. So the matrix needs the energy of spirit, of Holy Spirit, if you want, going into it, energizing it, and then the matrix is alive. And the third question was if the matrix was created from the beginning. This particular matrix, the way it is operating now, was existing as a prototype in the mind of the one from the beginning of creation, but was not created from the beginning. At the beginning, man used to, if you want, Adam, or the Adamic creators, there were many of those parts, were creating the matrix by the thought alone. They had to create a whole universe in the way the one creates universes, because they're direct projection, direct images of the Elohim. They had all these abilities and knowledge. But then, having said that, it became a problem in the eyes of the one, because they were only choosing nice, easy paths, pretty paths, or they would, since they could operate multidimensionally, they would just sweep through a whole matrix, and basically there was no challenge. It was just like having a toy and playing with it. You know, it's like, imagine you have a video game and you start mm-hmm. playing with all the abilities and possibilities, but you never really learn from it. You never have this ability. You never lose yourself into believing you are something that you are not. You don't lose yourself into a character. You follow me?
Yes.
You know who you are. You know you're the creator. You never think you are Mr. So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so or an animal or whatever. You follow? Mm-hmm. You lose this ability to get amnesia. So that particular operation was then lowered to a secondary operation, which where matrices were there too, but they were more reactive to the level of man. This is the level we see in the Bible with Abraham and Isaac. That's the second level of operation. They're reflective matrix. But there is a lot of cooperation then. It's a high-level operation. And then we created a third level where competition was instituted. and we're almost, you know, a total loss of awareness of being the one projected into a character or multiple characters, was putting into this matrix we're in now. So this matrix is the third, the lowest one, and by far the hardest one to evolve from, because of the degree of amnesia, which is gigantic here.
So here's a question from Dawn Moore that relates to that. Given this matrix is the lowest one, Dawn asks, are higher forces stopping mankind from destroying itself with nuclear weapons? It seems common sense to me that we would have killed ourselves by now. Is there a higher force that is intervening to prevent us from destroying ourselves?
Yeah, I can unequivocally say yes, from my own experience, and I've witnessed this. During the fall of the USSR, I was, I and some other people were in touch with the high levels of the one, and we were told in advance what would happen. As a matter of fact, I will publish a book soon that explains that here. And there was direct intervention. There had to be to stop the madness, because we were, you know, as the scientists used to say, we were like 2 minutes away from nuclear annihilation.
Right.
So in the same way as I, to a very small extent, can influence someone else's mind so that they think something, and I have influenced that thought, the Creator, who is but us, but in a much more powerful way, can influence a whole continent, if he wants, not only one human, making them do things and think in the way he wants them, because they're part of his thought processes. They're still inside of him. You follow?
Yes.
So he does RI on a gigantic scale, but he restricts his interventions to only points where humanity, because of its low level of operation, is about to blow itself out of the of existence. So yes, there was gigantic intervention against nuclear annihilation, and there will be again, if there's again a risk of nuclear annihilation, I can guarantee you there will be again gigantic intervention coming from high levels of the one, or even the one himself.
Wow.
To avoid it.
Wow, that's a fascinating story. I would love for you to go a little bit deeper in that. You talked about how you and a group of people were in contact with the one during that time when the Soviet Union collapsed. Could you elaborate?
Yeah, I was writing a book, which I will publish soon, and I was getting this information.
Wow.
And I was, as a matter of fact, while I was writing the book, there was intervention during the, I saw intervention during the Gulf War. I witnessed it. I would be told. I remember when there were missiles that were falling on top of Israel, and the one would tell me, watch, this missile is going to go, you know, it was supposed to hit a certain city, and then suddenly he would disappear from a radar screen. He would just disappear, but he would tell me in advance, watch it, because I'll make it disappear, and he would just, they didn't know where he went, he was just gone. So, trust me, if the one needs to intervene, he will do it.
I see. Now, and... This is fascinating. You got to forgive me for like pausing for a while, because I'm trying to digest this. Now, can you give us other examples where you've been in touch with the one and seen these interventions?
Of course, the end of Nazism is an intervention. D-Day is an intervention.
Wow.
I mean, if there would have been no intervention, the Germans would have known that are you kidding? You see the amount of forces that were getting ready to cross into Normandy, and the Germans were waiting for them in Calais. That's not because of the other, you know, the German Secret Service failure or the... No, it was not like that. They were made to see what they were made to see and not to see what they were not meant to see. It was arranged so that there was gigantic intervention so that, you know, so that Germany falters. There will never be... Evil will never succeed in this creation, ever.
So then answer
but
this...
The one allows that game, if you want, or that play, to be played out to a very large extent to test his creatures here, and to test certain creators or forces that exist within this realm or parallel realm that sometimes come over here and alter this creation, to see how far they will go and what they want to do with their creation. You understand?
Yes, yes. And you
but
just...
he will not allow destruction.
Right.
To a total extent, or total fascism. That cannot happen.
You just
it will not
preempted my question. Yeah, because I was going to ask, well, World War II took 45 million lives. Why didn't he intervene sooner? I mean, how many would be enough? 5 million, 10 million, 45 million? And you just went ahead and answered that. I know other people were thinking of that as well.
Right.
Okay, so one more general theme we saw in the questions that came in, and we had about 8 or 10 people who asked this, and it's about 2012. It was amazing how many people posed questions on 2012. Could be because of that new film that's coming out about the end of the world coming in 2012. So this question
did you hear me well? Because I have a problem hearing you right now.
That's fine.
You hear me well.
We can hear you loud and clear. So this question is from D. What is happening with this 2012 business, and what is everyone so worried about it? Is there something to worry about?
Okay. There's two ways of looking at this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I'll give you one answer, Y2K.
Okay.
Everybody was worried about Y2K, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there were more reasons to be supposedly worried about Y2K because the notion of computers is much closer to us. We created them. They're not complex machines like the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And we really thought that because we had programmed them in COBOL, and then the codes had not been done in advance, that the electrical grid and God knows what was going to collapse, and the government invested a tremendous amount of money. I knew programmers that were doing work right and left, and we thought the end of the world will come. Well, nothing happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you're asking me 2012, if something major will happen, I don't think so. I don't want to depress anybody, but I do not think so. However, there are metaphorical messages coming into play here. And they should be understood as metaphorical messages. The one is to say that the calendar of the Mayans is stopping. There is nothing after that. I wrote in 2 years ago on my New Year's message that this is the end of time. You know, we're about to, as a matter of fact, this is the end of time as we understand it. And this is the beginning of real time. I mean, this creation is not ending now, it's about to begin, because we are going from history, where the one changes the past and gives us all kind of nice stories in the past. We have no way of knowing whether they really existed,
mm-hmm.
or they're just holographic stories that we think existed, and we can find proof of them because the battlefields are there, and then there is mummies, and that means nothing. Do you understand?
Uh-huh.
It doesn't mean that they existed. They're only within the Matrix. They can be shown to us, energized. But this, because there is no linear time, but this is the end of history prepared for us so that when the children are ready to manifest and really create and show their desire to unite, they will start the beginning of real time. Now, the beginning of real time is not going to operate under the constraint of the old time. We are going to be able to manipulate time, to extend it, to contract it, it will feel different. I already feel the difference already for years. It's a totally different way of operating with time. I know a lot of my students have the same situation. At first, it becomes frustrating sometimes, but as they start learning how to deal with it, they even like it.
Wait. Now you're saying that we are about to arrive at a stage of evolution or consciousness evolution, where we can now manipulate the very nature of time?
Of course, yes. You spread time is only an impression.
I see.
You know, the fact that a watch goes around, 360 mm-hmm. degrees and it shows you that it's 1 hour doesn't mean that it's 1 hour. All it tells you is the watch went around. You might be able to do 10 things in 1 hour or two. And if you need to do 10 things, you can adjust your time so that you finish your 10 activities. We're going to be goal-oriented, not time-oriented.
Wow. No,
I would not invest in a lot of watch companies now.
That's interesting. Okay, so before we go on to the next question, those of you listening in, we have about 20 minutes left on this call. And we have 500 questions. We've only been able to cover about 10 at this point. So I'm sorry if we couldn't answer your question. We simply tried to pick the 10 most relevant, insightful, most common questions that we got. Now, those of you who are listening in, if you want to find out more of what Gerald is talking about, if you'd like to be one of Gerald's students, please scroll down and click on the link, the Learn More link, okay? And that will take you to Gerald's website. If you're driving, if you are listening to this on your MP3 player while you're jogging, just when you get back, just go to learnremoteinfluencing.com. I repeat, learnremoteinfluencing.com. And that's Gerald's website, and there'll be more information over there. Okay, so you can either scroll down or you can point your browsers to learnremoteinfluencing.com. So, Gerald, now we were talking about time and the end of time, as you put it. Give us some examples. Are you saying that we are about to enter an era where time travel is possible, or that we can speed up time, slow down time, manifest things at will by shortening the time to reality gap? Please elaborate, because this is fascinating.
Probably all of the above, but I don't think people are going to be time travelers right away now, because they will have to become, you know, multidimensional beings for that.
I see.
But I think some people, yes, are going to be doing it. They're going to start doing it anyway, and they will then teach others how to do it. It's going to be a progression in the process. I beg of people not to believe this is the end of the world. You know, this is not the end of the world. This is the end of the old world.
I see.
This is the end of the old matrix, but it's not the death of the old matrix. We're not going to destroy the matrix. The matrix is precious. We have to bring the matrix up also into a higher level of operation. When you look at the movie Matrix, at the end, when Neo goes back to the One and brings back new codes for the One, for the Matrix, the Matrix remains, but it becomes recoded, if you want, reprogrammed into a magnificent creation, where these facets of aggression and competition and violence are just gone.
Right.
They don't appear there. And that's what we should all be looking forward, and that's what we should be preparing for, not for, you know, dig a hole in the earth and prepare with guns to shoot the armies of bankers taking over the world and
right.
The aliens coming down from the sky. I beg of people not to go crazy on that. These are false stories implanted by the dark. Not because the stories are going to happen, because they want to put these people into a low vibratory hum of fear. And I'm not blaming the people who connect to that, because it's not their fault. It's the fault of the ones that are implanting these stories in.
I see.
Because when you're in fear and you're not working with peace and joy and looking forward to the next step of creation, and you're just locked in into this fear mode, then you can't advance. You get stuck.
Thanks, Gerald, and thanks for clearing that up. So here's a question that I want to dive into. This is from Subin Lee, and this relates to what you just spoke of. So what then is the purpose of life? Is it to experience the ultimate truth, which is often called God, so that the whole universe can evolve endlessly? What would you say about the purpose of life? Why are we here?
Okay, that in a nutshell. It's not for you to experience God. You are God. There is only God. There is nothing anywhere that is not God. From the manifestation of matter, to your dog, to your cat, to you, to other creations, to beings that are non-manifest, to evil, to good, all of this is God. Otherwise, it would not exist. In order for it to exist, God has to vibrate and imagine in his own mind all of these beings at once. It's a level of intelligence that we cannot even remotely perceive. Of course not. So we are all God. Now, what's the purpose of life? It's in a very highly philosophical way, but very profound way. It is for the one solitary mind, which is all there is, to lose that sense of solitude, of being just alone, and find company in the presence of the multitudes that he keeps vibrating in his own mind, so that he has an impression of many beings being him. And then therefore he gets attached to these facets, or if you want, characters and creators and follows their path and tribulations back to their awareness of, or close to their awareness of who they are, which is the one. But that's the purpose of life. It's for the one to create for himself an illusion of many and operate through it and create better and better and better creations every single time.
Thank you, Gerald. And now, just before we go on to the next question, I just want to share a couple of comments that we had. And these were, Gerald, these were not questions, but these were people expressing their appreciation for your past interviews. I just want to share so you too have a sense of how people are responding to your work. So Kristen wrote, "Thanks for introducing me to Gerald. He has radically changed the way I look at life, and I cannot begin to express how deeply my thinking has changed. Gerald blows my mind out of the water every single time I listen to him." And here's another one. We don't have a name, but it says, "I must say I have found your course to be extraordinary, not only in the concepts, but also in its presentation and delivery. Besides the invaluable training, I want to thank you for opening the doors to an inexpressible and permanent joy where fear has simply disappeared." And the last one is from Diana. "Thank you so much for your course, which is filled with fantastically colorful imagery, beautiful and loving messages, and deep mystical archetypal teachings. Using them is like applying rocket boosters to my spiritual development." So anyway, I love seeing those comments on the blog. So if you're interested in finding out more about Gerald's powerful new ideas, scroll down on the page where you're listening to this audio to learn about the special offer that he's put together for you. Now, basically, this is what Gerald has put together. He is giving away 4 CDs in digital format. So these are like MP3 downloads. You download them, they go straight to your iPod. And these are going to be 4 intense teachings on remote viewing and remote influencing. These CDs are absolutely free, so you're not paying for the CDs. All you need to do is scroll down. There's a $1 processing fee that covers the cost of download, hosting the membership website. And you get these CDs free for 30 days. So you can listen to them for 30 days. And I mean, 4 CDs, 30 days should not be a problem. You can try it. If you decide to keep it because you feel they are valuable and they've helped you, then at the end of the 30 days, you'll be billed a full amount on your credit card. But you can also listen to them. And if you don't feel they're absolutely stunning, then you can just go ahead, shoot an email at the email address that'll be provided. The billing will be canceled. And all you've paid is just $1. Okay, so it's really simple. It's called a 30-day trial. And we think it'll be a wonderful way for those of you who appreciate Gerald's teachings to take this to the next level. And if you really like Gerald's teachings, but you're a little bit short of money, then really try it out for $1, return it after 30 days. We are totally fine with that. So I'll leave it up to you. Anyway, scroll down. All the information is over there. Gerald, let's go on to the final question, the final group of questions. This is from Ephes, and she asks, "So the population is increasing. Human beings are giving birth to more and more kids. Who are these additional souls who come in to enter the human body? How is the link between the spirits that will experience human life and the human birth rate? Are these spirits standing in line for their human experiences?"
That's a difficult one to explain.
Okay.
There are a lot of high beings that originate from different realms, not the Earth realm, that are now either implanted here already or about to come in. Mm-hmm. And they will come as teachers, and also they're going to come here because they will be needed in order to bring a higher vibration in their DNA as they mix with the DNA of the Earth. This is about to happen. As far as what happens within the Earth, it's just the way the Earth is multiplying. You know, it's a exponential growth, and this is just happening. That's why now we need more than ever to have that quantum jump of awareness within the Earth, and it has to happen soon because of the increased amount of birth rate and population.
I see. So let's go on to this question. How does remote influencing and the courses that you teach, Gerald, relate to the art of manifesting your reality? This is from Roxanne.
It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. Well, remote influencing means that you have the ability to influence realities that in your perception are not, you know, proximate to you or around you, you can or within you. So that's manifestation. You know, that's what manifestation is about. It's remote influencing. Creation is about remote influencing. When the creator is creating an event, he's remote influencing that event. He's creating anything. He's remote influencing the outcome of an event. So that's just a way of calling manifestation in a different way.
I see.
In other words, the remote influencing is what caused the manifestation to happen.
I see. And now, so we have just a few minutes left. I'm simply going to ask the final question at this point.
Yeah.
And the final question is this. Given what you know, what do you think is going to happen to the world in the coming years, given the world economy going into hyperinflation or further collapse? This question is from David.
You know, I don't like to be a harbinger of bad news. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of dislocation that are happening all around us, not only financially, but in all of our systems, our belief systems. People are in limbo. They're just trying to understand how to handle it, and most people are looking to their past experiences or history, thinking that by looking at the past, you will be able to solve the situations or the crisis that are basically arising almost daily now. And that's not going to be doing too well. Now, there's a reason for this. There's a reason for the crisis, and there's a reason for the old solutions not to be able to solve them anyway, anymore, as they were able, you know, they were able to palliate them, not to really solve them. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because we're going to have to open up ourselves to a new way of thinking, a new way of operation, and to request and require within ourselves that connection now to a higher, much higher level of intelligence and guidance. Mm-hmm. And that is not to be found in history, especially not human history.
Right.
So as long as we open ourselves to that guidance, and that's what our course is teaching. That's by far more important than many other aspects of this course. That guidance comes in. It doesn't have to be coming in a rumbling voice. It's just it comes in within you because the connection is made and you have this awareness of being connected. You become aware of the connection that's very, very deep inside of you. And then you just suddenly have those original thoughts coming up, and then you invent new things that were not there before, and you see the world with different eyes, and you care more, and then you're tired of the way the old world was operating, or the way your friends are still thinking, or maybe your spouses, and you become a different human being. You have made the jump. You there already, and then you start advancing. And the more this is going to happen, the more these people are going to be able then to influence a world and then really solve these crises. Now, if you're asking me the details of them, I don't have them. I know it's going to be hard at first as a dislocation, but I have a lot of faith in humanity. I know that when times get tough, humanity tends to unite. Mm-hmm. And care for each other, and that's a trait we've always shown throughout history. And in this, and now we see this being projected even internationally. This used to be done within one country, you know, one's village, but now you see countries caring over other countries. On top of it, we know, and I can tell you that the one is watching and intervening directly in the heart of man. So I'm positive, but I know for a fact that the old structures will need to change. Now, how brutal the change will be, has also to do with our decisions. You know, we have still free will. At least we're allowed to have free will. And if we are using our free will to manifest more of the same and more, egoistic or egocentric tendencies and as we did in the last couple of years, maybe there will be less intervention for a while so that we fall a little bit harder down so that we call for more help and we unite finally. But it's just a difficult period, but after that comes a beautiful, beautiful creation.
Yeah. So thank you, Gerald. That is a beautiful way to end this call. And like you said earlier, there is a force intervening to help pull us out of moments in history when humanity may be going down a downward spiral. And it's very refreshing to hear. You said you apologize for being a harbinger of doom, but I didn't detect that at all. In fact, I felt that you were really radiating a lot of positive energy and positive thoughts about our future. Gerald, thank you so much. Always a delight to be talking to you, and I hope we'll get to talk to each other again soon.